The Many Murders of Charles Daines. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, it is 1839 in the village of Hempnall outside Norwich. Charles Daines, 50, a carpenter by trade, has been arrested for a string of murders and attempted murder. His three-year-old daughter Elizabeth has died an agonising death, as has a family friend, Elizabeth Mills, who came to help. His wife, Hannah, lies on the brink of death. His second child, luckily, seems to be recovering. Neighbours who had all come in to offer support report on his strange behaviour, similar to a man attempting to get rid of evidence, upon his arrival from work to be with his family in acute distress. No one can understand why he may have attempted to kill his wife and family until evidence surfaces of Anne Lloyd, the attractive widow in the neighbouring village. We take a look at the crime, the background, and the capture of the murderous Charles Daines in today's episode of Wicked Wednesdays. We hope you enjoy the show. It all seemed to be a perfectly normal day in March 1839 in the Daines household in the small village of Hempnall. Charles Daines, 50, who worked as a journeyman carpenter, is up before the rest of the household, and as usual, he lights the fire and places fresh water in the teapot, which he then sets on the chain above the hearth to have ready made warm water for tea when the rest of the family awake. Charles, off and on, has been involved in the Methodist Bible community and enjoys a good reputation in the village as a quiet and serious man. His employer speaks highly of him. After a short time, his son, an 18-year-old John, comes down for breakfast, which he shares with his father, and they have a bit of bread and milk and head off to work together. Wife Hannah, who has been sleeping with both children, comes down after the departure to get things ready for breakfast for herself and the children. Elizabeth, who is 3, and an 11-year-old son. Hannah has some bread she has already made and puts together the morning meal of sop, bread soaked in milk, sometimes with some sugar added to it. As the children come bounding downstairs to sit for breakfast, they tuck into their meal whilst Hannah pours out tea for herself and the children. Within minutes of drinking her tea, Hannah can feel both her stomach and the back of her throat burning. The children also become violently ill. Struggling to care for her children whilst she herself is violently ill, she calls out for help. Good friend Elizabeth Mills arrives to help settle the children and Hannah. Both the children and Hannah are retching violently, although with young Elizabeth nothing is coming up. Settling them in as best she can, friend Elizabeth Mills takes a cup of tea and a piece of bread and finds herself also acutely unwell. Neighbours are called out, asking for their help. Neighbours arrive, and seeing the seriousness of the situation, they send word to Charles at work that he is to come home at once, as his family are all acutely unwell. From the Essex Herald, the 19th of March, 1839, family poisoned at Hempnall. This village and neighbourhood has been greatly excited by an attempt to destroy a family of the name of Daines, it would appear, by poison. Unfortunately, up to the present moment, the diabolical object has been to certain extent accomplished. The individual who is at present suspected is Charles Daines, a carpenter by trade, residing in a retired part of the village. On Monday morning, it appears he left his house and, having filled the kettle with water and sat it on the fire, which was stated was his habit, and about 10 o'clock after breakfast, his wife and two children, who had drunk of the tea, were seized with violent sickness and vomiting. A female named Elizabeth Mills, who attended the house on various occasions, was sent for. When she arrived, she partook of the tea and was also immediately seized with violent symptoms of the same nature. The youngest child soon expired, and about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Elizabeth Mills died. The other child and Daines's wife remained in a most dreadful state. Mr. Pilgrim, the county coroner, was immediately sent for, who empanelled on Wednesday morning a most respectable jury. The Honourable Admiral Irby and all the magistrates of the district attended. The inquiry continued until 6 o'clock, when the inquest was adjourned to the following morning. A post-mortem examination was made by Messrs. Utting and Barton of the bodies of the two individuals who died, and the stomach was forwarded to Norwich for analysis. The analysis of the stomachs not having been concluded by Thursday, the inquest was again adjourned until Friday morning. The husband still remains in custody at Hempnall. So atrocious a crime has naturally excited the utmost horror in the district, and the magistrates and principal inhabitants are using their utmost exertions to discover the perpetrator. Given how Elizabeth Mills, unrelated to the family, is so directly taken unwell, and also the rapidity of the symptoms of the family, poison is immediately suspected. As Elizabeth Mills and the 3-year-old daughter Elizabeth Davis are both now deceased, this is now a murder investigation. Suspicion immediately rests on the father of the household, Charles Daines. Neighbours whisper of his unusual actions upon his arrival at the house where his family are in the throes of an excruciatingly painful death. As is usual at the time, a coroner's inquest takes place within days of the death to determine the causes of death and to establish whether a crime has been committed, and if indeed a crime has been committed, to determine the most likely suspect based on the evidence. From the Norwich Mercury, the 23rd of March, 1839, the murder at Hempnall. The investigation was commenced on Wednesday the 13th inst by Mr. Pilgrim, one of the county coroners, and was attended by the Honourable Paul Irby and all the magistrates of the district, and the jury was composed of some of the leading men of the neighbourhood. The investigation lasted 3 days. It appeared that a journeyman carpenter living at Hempnall, of the name of Charles Daines, got up as usual on Monday morning to go to his work, and having his wife and 2 children in bed, taking with him his son. Daines made a fire and filled the kettle, which we understand he was sometimes in the habit of doing, but this was done before his son came downstairs. When Mrs. Daines came down, she and her 2 children breakfasted, all partaking from the water from the kettle, but they were very soon taken very sick. A person of the name of Mills was sent for, and not having any suspicion, took a cup of tea and a piece of bread, and was instantly taken ill. It was considered by then all to be the cholera, as the wife of Daines said they had been attacked twice before in a similar way. The husband, who was at work not far off, was then sent for, and told that his wife and family were very ill. He soon came home, and was observed to take the kettle off the fire, saying at the same time, "Surely there is nothing in the water," then took it away and rinsed it in a small beck of water near the house, and filled it again, saying he thought they might want some more warm water. Messrs. Utting and Barton, 2 surgeons residing at Stratton, were then sent for, but one of the children died in about half an hour, and the poor woman mills in about 3 or 4 hours afterwards. Dane's wife is still lying in a most dangerous state, but the other child is likely to recover. A number of witnesses were examined, and all parties appeared anxious to bring this mysterious affair properly to light. It was proved that Danes had not of late lived on good terms with his wife, and that he had formed an improper acquaintance with another woman, and had been heard to say that his wife was in ill health and not likely to live long. A post-mortem examination took place by Messrs. Utting and Barton, who were both perfectly satisfied from the appearance of the stomach that the woman and child died from the effects of violent mineral poison, and stated that they had every reason to suspect that the poison administered was arsenic. However, for greater satisfaction, Mr. Barton took part of the stomach and sop to Norwich for analysis, which were clearly proved to contain arsenic. The Friday morning, Charles Danes, who had been in custody from the Monday morning, was brought into court by the officers of the parish, and the coroner, after briefly explaining to him the nature of the case and asking him whether he wished to say anything in his defence and whether he would like to hear the charges and evidence against him, Danes expressed a wish to make a few observations. He denied any knowledge of the fact, stating that he thought some person must have entered the cottage on the Monday morning after he left and put something in the kettle. The coroner then briefly summed up, stating that it was unnecessary for him to make any observations, as the jury were quite competent to decide in a case of this kind. If they were satisfied that Danes was innocent, they were bound to acquit him, but if from the evidence before them they considered there was sufficient proofs of his guilt, it was their duty to return a verdict accordingly. The jury, after consulting together but a short time, returned a verdict of wilful murder against Charles Danes. The coroner then ordered Danes to be brought in and told him it was his painful duty to commit him to the county jail. Danes was immediately brought to Norwich by the parish officers of Hempnall, and the witnesses entered into recognitions to appear at the next assizes to give evidence. We understand the coroner feels much indebted to the magistrates for their attendance and kind offer to render any assistance. As Charles sits in jail awaiting his trial, evidence is gathered. The charges against Danes have been split into two groups, a common tactic by prosecuting teams at the time as a type of backup. If the accused got off one charge, they would be brought up on another. From the first trial, the charges are specific to the deaths of Elizabeth Mills and Elizabeth Danes, his daughter. Charles Danes, aged 50, is initially charged with the willful murder of Elizabeth Mills, the woman who came to help the family in distress and who unwittingly partook of the poisoned tea, and Elizabeth Danes, his 3-year-old daughter, who also died an incredibly painful death. Several witnesses are brought forward to relay the events of the day, including his 18-year-old son, John Danes, who worked for the same company as his father. He recounts what sounds like a normal day for himself. He testifies that he believed his father, as was usual, had put fresh water into the kettle and placed it above the fire, but this had happened before he was up. Evidence is given from neighbours testifying that Mrs. Hannah Danes, the husband's wife, had 2 previous similar episodes of being terribly violently ill, the symptoms she experienced this time being quite similar to the 2 preceding episodes.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ah, it worked. Hello, there you are. Andrew here, and this is Shandor.
Hello!
We've got a brand new season of the Family Histories podcast for you with another 7 fascinating guests who'll be telling us about their secretive granny, a brave sailor, a political poet, a merchant seaman, a priestly lover, a resistance member, and a magnificent aunt that they've discovered in their family trees. And did I mention that there's a secret time machine? No, of course I didn't. Anyway, search for the Family Histories podcast after this episode to join us on our trip back in time. Okay, you can switch it off now.
Charles Daines's first actions upon going home with the news of his family's illness is to take the teapot outside, empty it, rinse it, and refill with water to place over the fire. This is attested to by the many neighbours in the house who were there to offer assistance. The medical testimony between two leading surgeons in the area confirms the presence of arsenic within the stomachs of the deceased, as well as in small flakes found in the sop, a bowl of bread soaked in milk, that was quite common in poorer families, that all had been partaken of. The police initially questioned Charles Daines upon arriving at the scene. Daines's contention is that the door was unlocked and that anyone could have gone in and possibly poisoned the family. He is unable to give any motive as to why a person or persons may have wanted to do this. He knows of no enemies to the family. The judge addressed the jury, directing them to remain impartial. The jury retired for approximately half an hour and acquitted Charles Daines of the murders of Elizabeth Mills and his infant daughter, Elizabeth Daines. From the Norwich Mercury, 13th of April, 1839, the verdict. The judge, in addressing the jury, wished them not to be influenced by anything they might have heard out of doors and proceeded to comment on the evidence, leaving it to the jury to say whether under all the circumstances the cause of death arose from poison and that such poison was administered by the prisoner to the deceased. If so, they would find him guilty. If on the contrary, or in any case of any doubt, they would acquit against him. The jury retired for about half an hour and on returning into court acquitted the prisoner. There is no eyewitness account as to anyone having seen Daines place arsenic in the food. It is confirmed that there is arsenic in the house, but the house is confirmed as being overrun by mice. With no clear motive as to why he would want to kill Elizabeth Mills and his daughter Elizabeth Daines, he is acquitted. However, Daines is still held for the next charge of attempted murder against his wife, Hannah Daines. One side incident that occurred. Such is the tremendous interest in the case, it was discovered that officers of the court had taken money from visitors wishing to attend the court hearing. The judge severely reprimanded two officers and threatened to prosecute any officer who should henceforth commit such a heinous crime. Although it would appear that Charles Daines had gotten away with it, the prosecution immediately charged Daines with having feloniously administered to Hannah Daines a quantity of arsenic with intent to kill and murder the said Hannah Daines. A second court charged Daines with having caused Hannah Daines to take the poison. The prosecution begins by stating that they have no hard feelings regarding the judgment of the previous trial against Daines, as there was a piece of evidence in the trial that was the motive missing. However, this lack from the first trial was easily supplied in the second trial. From the Norwich Mercury, the 13th of April, 1839, the prosecution stated There was other circumstances which would be laid before the jury and which went very strongly to indicate a deficiency in the proof given in the former trial. It was almost impossible to conclude anyone could be capable of making an attempt on the life of one whom he was bound to love and to cherish without some motive by which he was actuated. That motive, in this instance, would be supplied. Unfortunately, the prisoner during the last 2 years had formed a criminal connection with a woman named Lloyd, who would be called before the jury and who would prove that the prisoner stated to the woman that his wife was an ailing person and he did not think she would last long, and he wished her to keep single that he might marry her if his wife died. This supplied the motive. Mr. Evans then went on to state all the circumstances of the case and called as the first witness Hannah Danes, the wife of the prisoner, who appeared deeply affected. Hannah Danes, the wife of the prisoner, is called in. She recounts the morning activities of the day in question. She states how she fed the children the sop made from bread she herself made, and how she then had a cup of tea. Hannah continues to explain how it took only some 5 minutes before she felt her stomach burning as well as her throat. Her children started vomiting, and she was trying to care for them whilst she herself could not stop retching. Regarding Anne Lloyd, the alleged mistress of her husband, from the Norwich Mercury, the 20th of April, 1839, I know Anne Lloyd. She lives at Tasborough, about 5 miles from Hempnall. She is a widow. She has been to my house. My husband has been acquainted with her for about a year and a half. I've had bad words with my husband about Anne Lloyd because he did not behave so kind to me as he did with her. I had seen him too sociable with her to mind more than once. He wished once to speak with her in secret. I asked why, what have you to say that I might not hear? I have had words with my husband regarding Anne Lloyd on other occasions. Anne Lloyd said to my husband that she did not think he had the love for his wife and family that he ought to have. My husband said he could not help it. This conversation took place last summer before harvest. Anne Lloyd is a tailoress, and I have heard her say she has had an acquaintance with a man named Hawke. She even told me she was going to marry to him. The motive is quite clear, and the urgency to kill his wife, even at the expense of his own children, is now more understandable, as well as would seem Anne was being wooed by another at the same time. The judge summed up the evidence and the jury retired. After an absence of 1 hour, the jury returned into court and rendered a verdict of guilty. The learned judge, in a most impressive manner, immediately proceeded to pass on the prisoner the awful sentence of the law, earnestly imploring him to repent his crime and to endeavour to make peace with God. An attempt is made by the defence to expunge the second verdict, stating that Danes was in effect being tried twice for the same crime. This was completely dismissed. With no hope left for Danes, he's taken to the cells to await his execution day. Within the cells, facing certain death, Danes confesses. From the Norwich Mercury, the 20th of April, 1839. Confession. The prisoner, almost immediately after being taken to his cell on Friday evening and after his condemnation, made an entire and unreserved confession of his guilt to the chaplain of the jail. He also acknowledged he had made the attempt on two former occasions, one by putting a small quantity of arsenic on some fried potatoes, and the other by mixing a portion of the same deadly poison in some pea soup. We understand he is quite resigned to his fate, acknowledging the justice of his sentence, and is endeavouring, with assistance of the excellent chaplain, to prepare himself for the awful change which awaits him. He is said to be executed on Saturday, the 27th, inst. Daines's execution draws one of the largest crowds on record for an execution recorded up to 1840. From the charter on the 5th of May, 1839, the execution of Charles Daines in Norfolk. The awful sentence on Daines for administering poison to his wife with intent to murder her was carried into execution on Saturday in the presence of one of the largest concourses of people ever witnessed at Norwich, the greatest part of whom were females. As the clock struck 12, the procession left the castle for the scaffold, which was erected in the centre of the bridge leading to the castle gates. Daines appeared to be in extreme distress as he ascended the platform, supported by two of the turnkeys and attended by the reverend chaplain reading the burial service. The cap was immediately pulled over his eyes. He turned his back upon the crowd. The rope was quickly adjusted and the drop fell. His death appeared to be an exceedingly hard one. His violent struggles and convulsive throes lasted 3 minutes. His hands moved up and down as if in prayer, as if in consciousness had not left him for some little time, and at length they became clasped as he struggled, became less severe. The awful stillness of death followed, and the body as usual remained an hour suspended, as a proclamation to the beholders that the wages of sin such as his is death, the ignominious death of the gallows. His body was then cut down, and with no relative expressing a desire to render it to the last offices of affection, it was carried into the castle for interment in the precincts of the prison as directed by law. That concludes this episode of Wicked Wednesdays, The Many Murders of Charles Daines. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.